If it was Kershaw tipping pitches, CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
One of the most disappointing developments of the 2018 baseball season, I think maybe for both of us, because this is one of the things that we share as fans of the game, is that Yoenis Cespedes has only played like 20 games. I think you can share that sentiment with me, right?
Correct.
Last night, in like weirdly possessive Holy Ghost form, we got a glimpse back into Yoenis Cespedes from 2014. If you haven't seen, Ramon Laureano literally threw a dart from the left center field fence all the way back to first base to get somebody out. I don't know how to describe this play other than the fact that it made me feel things that I have rarely felt while watching a baseball game.
This is genuinely one of the best throws I have ever witnessed, ever. And honestly, I'm not going to lie, I think it outstrips Cespedes' throw even, or throws that he made, because I know he's made multiple. This was insane. And I think part of what made it better is that he made the play beforehand too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you remember, right? But like these Cespedes throws, yeah, notorious for misplaying it and putting himself in a sticky situation. And then he has to make up with it with his cannon for an arm. But Laureano makes an insane running grab. If he'd just done that, that would have been enough. It would have been like, all right, man, you got wheels. And then he unleashes a cannon to get Eric Young Jr. out at first base, who has wheels of his own. I was left speechless, man.
I'm always fascinated by people who complain about how baseball is not entertaining, but then things like this happen. I'm like, are we watching the same game here?
I know, right?
I know it doesn't happen quite as often as we would like, but I think it's worth it. I think throws like this and plays like this make it worth the wait.
When I saw this throw, I imagined like a fictional conversation between Yoenis Cespedes and Ramon Laureano, with like Cespedes as like the master and Laureano as the young Padawan, and Cespedes is like, "You're ready, my son," and Laureano's like, "No, I don't think I am," and he's like, and Cespedes is like, "Just show them what you've got, kid," and Laureano goes out there onto the field and just pulls this wizardry.
He Miyagi'd him
for real, man.
As much as I would like to spend an hour long podcast talking about a visual thing that, if you haven't seen it, this doesn't make any sense to you, we do have to move on. but before we do, I'm Bobby Wagner.
I'm Alex Baisley.
And this is Tipping Pitches. We've gotten some feedback that the professional intro is something that people like. So we're going to keep doing it. We're going to test it out.
You know what? And it's good. And people actually know who we are, right? Like we got feedback on like the very first week from a random listener who said that we sound too much alike. And while I think that that's false, we'll tell you who we are. We'll let you into our lives a little bit more.
If we do really sound that much alike, we have to say it after everything we say.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, this is Bobby speaking. I hate to start us out after that blissful recap of Laureano's throw. I hate to start us out with bad news, but it's a sad week for lovers of baseball as Felix Hernandez has been moved to the pen.
This is absolutely heartbreaking. And it comes on the heels of like one of those plays that just makes you feel really warm and happy inside, where Felix Hernandez got Adrian Beltre swinging on like this Bugs Bunny curveball. And Beltre's just shaking his head, and Felix Hernandez is cracking up on the mound, like bent over in laughter. And then like a few days later, he gets moved to the bullpen. And I'm like, I just felt like the rug was pulled out from under me. Like all this joy and fun that we had is like very quickly coming to end. And he's only like 32 also, which is, I don't know, it feels like he's been around forever at this point. But yeah, this just makes me really, really sad.
It feels like the entire early 2010s was just him deserving Cy Young awards and not getting them, and then finally getting one because whatever the voting group was that year finally realized that he deserved it, even though he didn't have enough fucking pitcher wins. But yeah, he's got a lot of mileage on that arm. Like when you watch him pitch, it's not exactly coming easy. He's putting a lot of effort into each pitch. And so his decline has been steeper than some, like steeper than a Justin Verlander who has a pitcher perfect delivery and uses his lower half a lot. And not that Felix doesn't, but it's like, I'm looking at the MLB.com story about him moving to the pen, and it's just like Felix embraces pen role but vows to start again. And then like the header photo is just a photo of him throwing that, like you said, Bugs Bunny curveball, and his arm is just like bending in ways that it shouldn't, and he's like standing straight up, and I'm like, I kind of see how we got to this point.
Yeah, it's rough, man. He's had a precipitous fall from grace. And it's kind of disheartening to like take a look at his velocity graph, which is tracked back to 2007. And it's just a downward slope. Like he does not maintain any of that, like some of the other pitchers we've seen. And part of it is like, they rode him really hard, right? I mean, he pitched 250 innings back in 2010, and he's topped 230 more than a handful of times. I mean, they rode him really hard. And frankly, it hurts me that he may not even get to see the postseason, you know? Like one would think that the Mariners could have stumbled into it one year and he would have given them a real chance for that. But I don't know. This makes me feel really, really bad.
Yeah, it'll be really disappointing if we see them finally. I mean, for your sake, I don't want them to break their playoff streak. But that being said, unless the Yankees fall totally off the wagon, but it'll be really disappointing if we see them break their streak of not making the postseason and he doesn't even get to start like in the ALDS, because the reason that they were riding him so hard for all those years was so that they had a prayer of making the postseason, and he was like their only legitimate starting pitcher. Just now while you were talking, I looked up the Mariners career innings pitched leaders, and he's at the top with 2,600 innings. And next is Jamie Moyer, who, you know, hasn't been part of trying to drag them out of their playoff drought. And then it's Randy Johnson and Mark Langston, and just a list of guys who are not still playing. Mike Moore. And then you have to go all the way down to six before you get to a player who's still playing. And it's Freddy Garcia, who, you know, he's bounced around to a bunch of different teams since. He's not even...
Freddy Garcia is still playing?
I think in theory he's still active because he hasn't like, retired yet.
Right.
He's in the minors, I guess. I don't know. Hard to tell. Oh, he's pitching for a AAA team in Mexico? I don't really know. But that's my point, is that you have to go way, way down. And then, you know, the next active player who I actually recognize is Jason Vargas, who didn't really have much to do with pulling the Mariners out of a playoff drought either. So it's like, and then you go down even further and it's James Paxton, and he's at 561 career innings pitch for the Marlins. So it's like,
we're digging at the bottom of the well here.
Exactly. So Felix was really like the entire Mariners pitching staff for the better part of a decade. And it would be really sad to see if he can't at least be some kind of part, which is why I think like he's probably embracing his role in the pen. So it's a little bit CC Sabathia-esque.
Yeah, I think that like he could make it work. I mean, they had to do this, right? He has been quite bad this year, and that's probably an understatement. Like he's actively hurting their chances to get to the postseason with every start that he makes. And you know, maybe he takes the offseason to adjust to a new role and like has a second career in the bullpen. I'm not opposed to that. I think it could happen if it just takes a little training and rejiggering of your mindset. So I would enjoy that. And I do want to say, if nothing else, we got to see Felix Hernandez throw a perfect game, and at least he has his name in the record books that way. And that was absolutely incredible to watch when it happened back in 2012, which actually we're coming up on the anniversary of that in a couple of days. So I'm glad he has that under his belt. Yeah, August 15th.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's my grandmother's birthday. Anyway, well, pour one out for Felix. We'll pour one out for Felix. I don't have anything to pour out right here. I'll pour out some iced coffee. Shake that next to the microphone so you guys can know that I did it. From one player that we absolutely unconditionally love, to another player that we don't feel that way about. Noted Trumper Jason Wirth was in the news recently for going on the Howard Eskin podcast.
Is he a Trumper? I guess I missed that.
Pretty sure.
You slander Jason Wirth on this podcast? There are worse people to slander.
Yeah, Washington Post. Jason Wirth was, quote, really inspired after attending State of the Union address.
Solid.
Either noted Trumper or noted State of the Union enthusiast. Yes. Noted Trumper Jason Wirth was in the news this past week for a couple of different things, both of which I'm angry about. Number one, not surprisingly, was that he called every team personally to try to get a chance at continuing in the majors because the Nationals didn't re-sign him. He called every single team except the Mets, which is the most on-brand move. I almost like, I'm mad, but I almost respect it. Because it's yeah. like he's made a career out of just dunking all over the Mets.
I know. This is, yeah, what a way to like go out, right?
And secondly, he took this opportunity on the Howard Eskin podcast, who, if you don't know Howard Eskin, he's like a Philadelphia sports radio personality. He's had some questionable comments about the Sixers and the process and Joel Embiid in general. You should look into it if you really care. But he took this opportunity being on Howard Eskin's podcast to essentially just rail against analytics, just baseball analytics. He said, quote, "They've got all these super nerds in the front office that know nothing about baseball, but they like to project numbers and project players. I think it's killing the game. It's to the point where just put computers out there, just put laptops and what have you, just put them out there and let them play. We don't even need to go out there anymore. It's a joke." And then he continues to say, when they come down, these kids from MIT, Stanford, Harvard, wherever they're from, they've never played baseball in their life. When they come down to talk about stuff like that shifts, should I just bunt it over there? They're like, no, don't do that. We don't want you to do that. We want you to hit a homer. So is he trying to say he doesn't want to hit homers? Alex, explain this for me.
Yeah, I'm really confused actually by a lot of things here. Okay, you're turning players into robots, he says, which is really not true at all, actually. He says, we're creating something that's not fun to watch, to which I say, it's so easy to ignore all of this. And we've said this on the podcast before, but like, if you really hate analytics so much, just like close your eyes, bro, shut the laptop. You don't have to listen to anyone talking about analytics or something like that. And even if you're talking about it from like the perspective of a player, like you're still going out there and playing baseball every day. And you're upset that like people are coming down and giving you more information to like become a better baseball player. I guess I disagree with, but I understand why sports columnists and fans and what have you love to like rail against sabermetrics and be like, it's ruining the game. Like, stop yelling about WOBA to me. But like, for a player to be actively upset at a front office.
Stop yelling about WOBA is my new Twitter bio. Stop yelling about WOBA to me. We could make a woke baseball at drill account. And yeah. That would be our first tweet. Stop yelling about WOBA to me. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
I just don't get it, man. I mean, I appreciate that he's giving us this content because it's tremendous content. We've got all these super nerds. Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah, we should just put laptops out there. I would watch that.
It's a very Trumpian argument, right? He's railing against like smart things. Like he's railing against like education.
It's the whole, like, this is something that I don't understand, and therefore it makes me really angry.
Yeah, exactly. It's benefited him, though. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like the Nationals weren't looking at these things throughout his time there. You know? It's not like he didn't get hundreds of millions of dollars because they were like, he's still passable at a corner outfield position. When he signed it, he was, you know, fucking sieve by halfway through the contract. But he's still passable. He has a decent arm, and he fucking rakes. And he's going to be our first guy that we're going to invest in. You don't think any sabermetrics went into that decision? I think sabermetrics went into that decision to give him whatever, $100 million, whatever his contract was. It just feels like a very, it's low-hanging fruit for a baseball player who's like just recently out of the game.
Yeah, it's just kind of a tired argument. I'm like, dude, this was interesting maybe a few years ago, but like get some new talking points at this point. Oh, these nerds haven't played the game before. Like I remember reading about this stuff in like 2011. Like just come up with something more interesting at the very least if you're going to rail against stats.
Come on, Jason. I was reading about this before Homeroom and I'm graduating college now. All right, I don't have anything more to say about this, and we're trying to move quickly today, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you know, we're going to yell about other things that aren't Jason North related. Remember me now, things always change. Five long years have gone, I have some time, sleeping where I fall, I know I'll never be the same. Remember me now, things always change. Five long years have gone, I have some time, sleeping where I fall, I know I'll never be the same.
So we're big fans of Atlanta Braves broadcaster Joe Simpson on this podcast. He made headlines a couple weeks ago as being part of the duo to rail against the Dodgers taking batting practice in shorts and t-shirts. So we're big fan of his opinions over here.
I can't even kind of dignify that opinion as an opinion. It's, I just laugh every time.
I know, it's too good. But he went even further this week. And strayed into some murky waters with a comment that he made about Washington Nationals 19-year-old phenom Juan Soto. The murky waters were that he suggested that Juan Soto isn't actually 19. This is
I can't believe we're still doing this.
I seriously can't believe we're doing this in 2018. Yeah, he said on the broadcast, he's like, he is. If he's 19, he's certainly got his man growth. Oh, his man growth? Okay. He's big and strong. And it was just a throwaway comment that he was making when talking about Juan Soto, but it is so telling about just like what people like him kind of think about Latin American born players. And for him to suggest that Juan Soto is lying about his age is it's racist, frankly. Do you have thoughts on this?
That is one of my thoughts. Another thought is that, like you said, tired argument in 2018, but also like the Nats signed him when he was 16, which would indicate that they were scouting him since he was like 12. So do you really think that he was like 12, but actually what, like 15 at the time, and no one realized that? It's this thing where traditional baseball people don't acknowledge the Dominican Republic and other South American countries as part of the baseball world. You know what I mean? They think it's like this very nebulous, ambiguous place. And that sort of grants them the opportunity to just, like what Kelly was talking about, just ignore the plight of the people there and ignore the poverty that teams are going in and picking players out of. It's all part of this larger umbrella of, this isn't really a place that I have to think about in my daily life, and therefore Juan Soto is not a person who has gone through the same American ideals of, we know this much about him, we have his birth certificate on record, all these different things. It's just it's washing away his personhood, and you gotta love that from people who are employed by MLB teams.
Yeah, and I mean, we haven't had any controversies around anything involving age fraud or anything like that. Like, this has happened on a rare occasion in the MLB before, but like, for your mind to just like jump to that and be like, well, he comes from this lawless place where you can just make up your age, like, it's really bizarre, frankly.
It's fucking tired, and people who have platforms should stop doing it.
Yeah, it's not something that we should be discussing. And like, I don't even really have a more sophisticated take on that. And he apologized for it, but I don't know. I think it says a lot that was your like Freudian slip to just like automatically assume that he's lying about his age. It's very telling.
Well, also his comments indicate that like he's better than he should be at this point, you know? And that's true. Like, he's 19 and he's awesome in the major leagues. And he's better than most people are at this point. But to automatically assume that he's this good because he's not actually 19, like, he has his, what, man growth? Is that what he said? Man strength? Whatever he called it?
Man growth.
To automatically assume that it's because he's in some way being disingenuous and not just because he's better than everyone else is, again, like you said, racist.
Yeah. I'm going to assume that Joe Simpson said the same thing about Bryce Harper when he came up too, right? Because Bryce Harper was also incredible when he made his debut. There's no way he could have been 19.
No, and not at all. He's from Nevada. We don't have the same records. You know, birth certificates don't cross state lines, so we don't know how any of that works.
I will take this opportunity to say that Juan Soto is arguably the most fun player in baseball right now, and he's doing that at 19 years old. And if you're not watching him, you absolutely should be, because he's the future of baseball.
Go watch a video of him taking a walk and tell me that three true outcomes isn't the greatest thing. This dude can take a walk like nobody I've ever seen. He's like Joey Votto, except 19. Oh, Juan Soto is awesome. Baseball's good.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Let's move on. I was scrolling Instagram at work, because oftentimes I'm either swamped at work or doing absolutely nothing at work. So I was scrolling Instagram and I came across MLB Cut 4. And they posted the very iconic shot of Barry Bonds with both hands straight up in the air after he hit 756. And they said, 11 years ago today, Barry Bonds made history. And because I'm a trash person, I like to read the comments of a lot, like all posts. I read the comments of many tweets just to kind of see where the toxicity of social media is at these days. I like to compare between Twitter and Instagram and see which place is more toxic. And Instagram does a much better job. Although in this instance, I was reading the comments and it's just you can probably imagine what the comments on this post are like, but it's just a cesspool of people like screaming about how Barry Bonds was a cheater and how Hank Aaron is actually still the home run king, or people being like, face the facts, snowflakes. This is what it is now. Deal with it. He's the home run leader, all these different things. And I don't know why it struck a chord with me and why I screenshotted it and wanted to come back to it for the next time we talked, but there's something there, man. There's something about the residual anger that people still have 11 years later towards Barry Bonds for his alleged steroid use and, you know, the PEDs and that era.
I will say, it was not alleged. He absolutely used steroids.
Yeah, okay. But, well, some of the comments in there are just straight up, like, conspiracy theorists that he was, like, thrown into the fucking Balcor report or whatever and all these different things. Like, he wasn't using steroids. Like, he used steroids, but there's something there in the residual anger, I think, that I don't know why it bothers me, but it really does. It's like people can't let go and they're like pining for this ideal version of the game before steroids ever came into it and ruined it for them. And it's almost like anything since steroids changed the game and since we weren't falling in love with guys who were hitting 265 but could steal a couple bases and would slide a lot and get their pants dirty. I don't know why it bothers me so much. Do you have feelings about this? Like, do you have feelings about the continuous hatred towards Barry Bonds, even though he would have been probably the best player in the game had he not taken steroids?
I have many feelings about this, Bobby. Yeah, I don't even know where to start. And we should say that, like, it's an especially timely conversation because the Giants retired his number this weekend, which is why a lot of these conversations have resurfaced about like whether or not he belongs in the Hall of Fame. And Willie Mays made a very impassioned case for why Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame. And he probably should, right? Like, he's a part of the history of the game. There's like, you ignoring that does a disservice.
I leave the probably out. He should definitely be in the Hall of Fame, but continue.
Okay, yeah, no, I mean, it's like a museum. There's really no reason to pretend like this era of the game never happened, right? Like, Sammy Sosa should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, these players who used, just pretending that it didn't happen does nothing to, like, erase their names from the record books. So
yeah, it's cognitive dissonance at large by the entire MLB. And I feel like the cognitive dissonance is just laying the foundation for all of this anger that's still there and all of this, like, fuck baseball, I hate baseball for all these different reasons, for steroids, for bat flips, for all these things, for taking the manliness out of the game, for letting these players do whatever they want. And I feel like it's all part of this same concoction that people are just brewing with these negative feelings towards baseball. And I hate it. I hate that people can't just accept the fact that Barry Bonds hit 756 home runs no matter how he hit them. Like, that's an insane amount of home runs, and he was so good.
Yeah. And part of it, I mean, for me, part of my, like, generally speaking, I dislike Barry Bonds because I think that he's not a very good person. Like, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
And I hate Mark McGwire the same way, right? Like, I don't think
Jose Canseco, Rafael Palmeiro.
Jose Canseco. Yeah. Like, well, actually, no, I'm a Rafael Palmeiro stan. He lied to Congress. Are you he lied to Congress? Are you kidding me?
Icon.
Dude's a fucking icon.
he's a rebel icon.
For real. But I, you know, there's something about it that does kind of leave a bad taste in my mouth, in part just because of the personalities that these guys hold. I mean, Barry Bonds was also a domestic abuser, and I think that that's something that often gets left out of the conversation.
Yeah.
About his like accomplishments and just like whether it's like either it's black and white. It's either like Barry Bonds is good, put him in the Hall of Fame, seal the deal, or Barry Bonds cheated, therefore he's bad and we should like erase his name from history. And it's like it's an obscuring of a much more complicated figure that had a lot of very hot like highs and a lot of lows, and to basically kind of wipe away all of the like personality from him and the off-field stuff and all this stuff and literally just look at like that 762 number, I think does a real disservice to a lot of things, including the game of baseball itself.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of the reason why it makes me very uncomfortable when these conversations come up, is because he was a real dick. And that's probably not why a lot of people are upset at him. I think it's just very easy to be like, ah, steroid trash, like get him out of here. And
that's not
and
why maybe any people are upset about him. That's sort of my thing with this Instagram post is that I'm scrolling through the comments. I've been eating it and scrolling through the comments the entire time we've been talking about this, and there's not one comment that's not about steroids. There's not one comment about his complicated domestic abuse history. There's not one comment about him as a person other than just steroids or home runs.
Yeah. It's this kind of cleansing of the person beyond like what they did on the field. And I mean, you know, this happens all the time. This is not exclusive to Barry Bonds. This is a conversation that we're still having about active players today. But he leaves behind a very complicated legacy. And I think that, like, personally, it's easier for me to accept someone like Bartolo Colon or Robinson Cano, players who were suspended for PED usage, because I think that they were mostly just having fun with the game. And I don't think that there was, like, to my knowledge, there was no real negative impact on or off the field. And they're both very fun players, and I enjoy that. But Barry Bonds, I think, makes me, he kind of just makes my skin crawl.
Yeah, I'm with you. And we've talked about that before, or at least you and I have talked off mic about like Barry Bonds as a person, Barry Bonds as a complicated figure in baseball history. I just don't know why. I mean, I guess I do know why, but it's just disappointing how every time we come back to a conversation like this, it's like certain players are afforded in conversation and in the historical debate, they're afforded moral complexity and they're afforded nuance in the way people talk about them. Like, I'm thinking of Pete Rose. I'm thinking of Lenny Dykstra. I'm thinking of all of these different people who are thought of as like, they were great when they were on the field, but they were fucking up in other ways. And it's like, guess what? Barry Bonds was great when he was on the field, and maybe he was fucking up in other ways. But if you put a picture of Pete Rose, and people would have a lot of different things to say underneath, other than just like, he bet on games, you know? And maybe it's nitpicking a little bit just because like the post itself was about the home run record, and that's just opening up a firestorm in the comments. But it's like every time we talk about Barry Bonds, we're talking about steroids, and that's it. It's like, it's whitewashing baseball history, and it's also like whitewashing the social implications of baseball players in the past.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And ultimately, like, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame because he, like it or not, whether you think that he ultimately had a net positive or a net negative on the game itself, I think you can't deny it at all, right? Like I was saying, like just ignoring it will not make it go away. Do the Giants have to retire his number? That's maybe a little more of a complicated question because that's a decision that they're making on a very team-based level, and they have the opportunity to take into account moral character and something like that. And I mean, the Giants were never not going to retire his number, right? Like it was always going to happen.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a moot conversation anyway. But yeah, I think that when we have these conversations, we need to make sure that we're talking about the full scope of these things. And that goes for every player. That goes for Pete Rose, you know, that goes for Bobby Cox or whoever else.
Yeah.
Just reducing these players to like one-dimensional people who exist for our entertainment and excusing any abhorrently poor behavior elsewhere, I think ultimately does a disservice to the game that we all know and love and doesn't necessarily leave it better off than it was.
As we say often on this podcast, it's the year 2018. And we are surprised about many things that are still happening. Or many things that have just come about. One of which being, Fernando Rodney can relieve Edwin Jackson on the Oakland Athletics, a team that is now in prime position to make the playoffs. How do you feel about that?
That makes me so happy, I guess. I'm happy and also really confused, you know? It's like a confused happy. It's like the Nick Young meme where like I'm like laughing as I cock my head to the side because I really have no fucking clue what's going on. Yeah, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that Edwin Jackson and Trevor Cahill were gonna carry the A's to a potential postseason bid, I probably would have laughed in your face and then blocked you on Twitter. But here
blocked
we are,
you on
man.
Twitter, what a flex!
Yeah, that's yeah, real flex, man. I would have unfriended you on Facebook.
Can I just? I need to do something. I need
yes.
Edwin Jackson's Wikipedia page is a treasure trove. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
First of all, his birthday is coming up, September 9th, 1983. Do you want to guess what country he's from? It's not the United States. It's no longer a country. I'll give you that hint.
It's no longer a country. The USSR.
No, he was born in West Germany. That is some Cold War shit, my guy.
Wow. That's wonderful.
1983, he's 34 years old, which is like not even that old. It's crazy that people still pitching in the MLB have like World War or have Cold War fallout. That's insane. Okay, here's another thing. So you know like Wikipedia has the contents section and you can like click down into the different sections and whatnot. It's just like early life. Okay, it's fine. Professional career. And then listed underneath it is just all of the teams that he's played for. I'm going to take a deep breath and I'm going to try to read them all at the same time. Los Angeles Dodgers, Tampa Bay Rays, Detroit Tigers, Arizona Diamondbacks, Chicago White Sox, St. Louis Cardinals, Washington Nationals, Chicago Cubs, Atlanta Braves, Miami Marlins, San Diego Padres, Baltimore Orioles, second stint with Washington, and Oakland Athletics. My man has really, he's traversed the world in his 34 years.
He's been around the block and then some.
And it all ties nicely with last night. He was the pitcher on the mound for that incredible Ramon Laureano throw.
Yeah, and I want to point out, I mean, you know, 54 inning sample, but he's currently in the midst of his best season right now. At 34 years old with the Oakland A's on his 13th major league team.
What a trip, man.
I can't even with this.
What a trip. Speaking of trips, before we got on, before we started recording, we were talking about how it's weird. It's a weird week because one of your favorite players of all time, Eric Chavez, is back in the news. What's up with Eric Chavez?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say I like that we're getting back to our bread and butter of just like talking about old players who we really like. This is like a week two segment for us. Just be like, so what are some players who are like really old and like in their late 30s who probably aren't playing anymore that we had a lot of fun watching? we did a whole segment about injured players who would have been really fun if their careers had continued. Like that gave us an excuse to talk about Grady Sizemore for 7 minutes.
That was
minutes
a good segment. Reason. I'm not going to lie. I know. That was fun.
It was very enjoyable.
Grady Sizemore,
I love going
was
down
like
these
five-tool icon.
He absolutely was.
Five-tool icon, yeah, my boy is my Eric new Twitter Chavez, name.
Jesus Christ. Eric Chavez is back in the news because he was serving as like a special assistant to the GM for the Angels. And then he took over as their AAA coach. He's had no coaching experience whatsoever, but he's now coaching at AAA and simultaneously had his name floated to take over for Mike Socha at the end of the year. This is a weird way for his name to resurface, but I don't hate it because I love Eric Chavez and I want the best for him because he had a very sad end to his career. It was like, that wasn't like the Felix Hernandez, like, fast decline. That was like slowly watching a man like march toward his death for like 9 seasons. Yeah. I mean, that hurt to watch. But yeah, man, I wish all the best for him. I hope he takes over and leads Mike Trout to his first World Series championship.
What a weird sentence. Well, you had Eric Chavez all those years, and I had Andy Chavez, who made that incredible catch in the NLCS.
Yeah.
And different career trajectories, that's for sure. But Andy Chavez was fun. So I feel like I feel a little bit of solidarity with you.
For having an E. Chavez on your team.
Yeah, E. Chavez, man. Not remotely the same at all. Eric Chavez had an incredible career. He won 6 straight gold gloves at third base in the AL.
I know.
And I think 3 of those were when Alex Rodriguez was playing third base for the Yankees. So like, one of the best shortstops in the league moving to third base, and Eric Chavez was still like, psh, I'm a better fielder than you.
He's still one of my favorite all-time players. And I mean, we mentioned this before going on the air, but like, he basically only had 7 seasons where he played most or all of the year. And then he literally just could not stay healthy for the rest of his career. But he hit 270 in that span. He hit 270 and averaged like 30 home runs a year. If you keep that up, I don't know, you start to put yourself in contention for like among the best third basemen of all time. But I think people mostly just think of that like latter half where he like randomly played for the Yankees a little bit and went to Arizona too and was still kind of good, but funny story, he wasn't able to stay healthy and then he retired at 36 and now he's coaching AAA. So
in 2012 he played 113 games for the Yankees and he hit .280. He slashed .281, .348, .496 with 30 walks. And only
struck out 59 times. That's insane.
16 home runs too.
Yeah.
He only had 278 at bats, but still.
He was showing impressive plate discipline for basically his entire career. Eric Chavez was and still is the answer to 3 true outcomes baseball.
True. Like you were saying, Matt Chapman is just Eric Chavez, but from the right side of the plate.
That's literally who he is. That's who we're getting to watch. And it's wonderful.
So you said a line that struck a chord with me. You said, if Felix Hernandez was a precipitous decline, then Eric Chavez was just a slow death march. Slow death march could go on the David Wright Mets fandom tombstone. Though, we did get some good news recently. So if you haven't heard, David Wright is playing in a Class A game today. We're recording this on Sunday, but he's actually starting a real rehab assignment. And a lot of the Mets reporters are talking about how this is the first real step that the organization has taken towards him actually making a comeback since like 2016, which was the last time he played a big league game. May 27th 2016 was the last time David Wright played a big league game. That's truly wild. God.
I know.
I have a lot of feelings about this. I'm unstable, but in a good way. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think so.
I'm unstable, but I'm welcoming it. Because I'm never expecting him to be a regular thing in my life ever again. But I would give almost anything just to see him come up to the plate like a couple more times.
I know.
Because it was there and then it was just gone all of a sudden. And like, I didn't properly miss it because the Mets were still good. And so I was like, well, it sucks, but at least he'll be around the team. And, you know, they have a playoff run and all these different things. Like, he was on the team in 2015, but he only played 38 games. And he played in the playoffs, but he wasn't himself. Even though he did hit 289. Damn. He's an icon. Now that the Mets are sort of, like, in this morose malaise that they're in, where they're just, like, winning 65 games and an absolute dumpster fire and totally underperforming, I'm getting feel like shades of the feelings that I had in like the early 2010s. And I'm just like, the only thing at that point in my life was David Wright. And yeah, then shortly thereafter, Jacob deGrom. But he was like really the only thing that I had to rely on. So like, if I could just see it just a couple more times, just him coming up to bat for a fucking terrible Mets team, it would mean the world to me.
Yeah, I know. And like, as a just a general fan of baseball, I think that would be enjoyable. And that said, I am bracing for the fact that it will mostly look like agony because he has not played baseball since 2016, more or less. I mean, you know, he's been doing the old like dry swings and like making progress, quote unquote, in his return from his injury,
yeah,
or injuries, but I don't know, man. I want the world for him. I want him to tear up single A and get called up. And he takes over at third base and he looks like his old self, Captain America. And he just goes back out there and kills it in the last month of the season. I am bracing for that not to happen. But I will say that even just seeing him on the field will, I'm sure for Mets fans, just feel like a breath of fresh air that will just like take your mind off everything else that is going on.
Yeah.
And it is insane that he has not played since like 2016. Like, that's a ridiculous amount of time to just essentially be out of affiliated baseball and returning from an injury. So I do wonder what he's going to look like when he comes back.
When I think about David Wright, the lasting memories will be two things. Number one, it'll be him hitting two home runs in the last game that I ever saw at Shea Stadium and the Mets still finding a way to blow like a 5-run lead with their bullpen. It's fucking great. Pedro Feliciano. What a trip. And the second thing will be after they won the NLCS, just the interview that he gave with Steve Gelbs for SNY after they found out they were going to the World Series. And just, it was just a great, I hate to say bookend to his career because it was very clear at that point that it was like on the downturn and we weren't really sure what David Wright we were going to get for the future. But I will always remember that, just like him getting showered and talking about like all of the terrible moments that he had with this franchise, but how he wanted to stick it out with them. Those will be the lasting moments. So even if he comes back and looks terrible, it won't stick for me.
I gotta say, and this is no shade to David Wright, but my lasting impression of David Wright is when he beat out Eric Sogard in the fan vote for face of the MLB back in 2014, because the MLB, I don't know if you remember this, but the MLB pulled some shenanigans and bought some votes from somewhere in China to make sure that Eric Sogard would not win the face of the MLB vote. Because the two of them had made it to the final round and Sogard was absolutely going to win until mysteriously thousands of votes poured in overnight on the last night of voting from like China or something like that.
I like how you're mad about something that happened in 2014 for Eric Sogard.
Absolutely. For the A's, yes, I am.
Who hit 298 with one home run that year. Face of the MLB.
Of course I'm mad
about
that.
That is super on brand for you. I love it.
I love that, like, he's still the captain too. Like, yeah. The New York Daily News, their headline is that rehabbing Mets captain. And I'm like, David Wright is still the captain of the Mets? Like, I know that's not a title you can just, like, strip for him just because he's rehabbing. But, like, do you think that anyone else in the clubhouse is sitting there, like, pulling at their collar being like, so, we've got no captain around here. Does anyone else want to step up and take the mantle since David's out there in St. Lucie?
I mean, who the hell else is going to do it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Really fucking, Asdrubal Cabrera would have been the captain before he got traded to the Phillies. Okay, I'm going to take us out with this because we're very sad about the fact that we don't get to do Tim Tebow Power Hour anymore. So this is going to replace it. A tweet that we saw from at Twinkle Mets that I sent to you and said, we're talking about David Wright for an hour. Thankfully, we didn't actually talk about David Wright for an hour. We had better conversations for the first hour. But I'll take us out with this. It says, wow. Tim Tebow sacrificed himself so David Wright could live in the minors. It's all so inspiring.
I'm glad we still get a little Tebow content here, you know? And frankly, Tebow is the bigger person, you know? He crawled up onto that cross so that David Wright could make his return.
So true.
We started off the episode with Ramon Laureano channeling the spirit of Yoenis Céspedes, and we end with David Wright taking the strength of Tim Tebow and bringing himself back to life. My hands up, I let go. My mouth is getting cold. I know they come and go. La, 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 la. My wrist is stuck on froze. Places that I can't go. Niggas that I don't know. La, 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 la.
All right, thank you everyone for listening to this week's episode of Tipping Pitches. We're trying to have a lot of fun with it. It's a bit of the dog days of August of the baseball season, right, Alex?
That it is. Although I'm having fun. I don't know about you, but I'm enjoying it all the way.
I mean, the A's are the most fun story in baseball right now, so you should be having fun. Yeah, try to have fun with this episode, so hopefully you had fun listening. If you have suggestions for things you want us to talk about while... you know, the MLB is kind of in this period of very boring baseball. We're very open to them. So if there's a topic that we've never...
Crowdsourcing our content. Yeah. Just reaching out, being like, what do you guys want to hear?
But like, if there's a topic that we haven't covered that you think is right up our alley, that we're very open to it. Because quite often, the podcast is just us sitting down on Sunday morning and being like, so, did you see anything this week that you wanted to talk about?
Going back through our Twitter DMs and being like, what things have we sent to each other?
Going through our Twitter DMs, going through my fucking saved posts on Instagram. It's great stuff. But yeah, we're trying to have fun with
it. True content creators.
We're looking for content always.
Yeah, or listener questions or anything like that. Those are always fun, and we can take so much time to like answer them. We'll like, if it's the smallest question in the world, we'll go down a rabbit hole and spend 20 minutes doing it.
Yeah, and we'll make you feel special for it. So you'll get a name shout out, personal name shout out.
We'll increase your follower count, man. we got a brand going on over here.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, as always, follow us on Twitter at @tipping_pitches. Email us, tippingpitchespod@gmail.com. Go listen to us on Radio Public. Radio Public is kind of making some moves. I've seen like The Daily has partnered with Radio Public. Like, they post their link on the newyorktimes.com, which is crazy. If you don't know, Radio Public is just a podcast app. We make a very, 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 very small amount of money every time you listen to us on there, and that's pretty cool. So tell your friends, and yeah, that's all I got for you this week.
Thanks for listening, you guys. We'll see you next week.
Is that Nick Young or is that Nick Cannon? It is Nick. Wait. Hold on.
I thought it was Nick Young.
If you search. Oh, it is Nick Young. If you search if you search Nick Cannon meme, that also comes up, though. They look a lot alike.
Yeah, they actually do.